I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Evan Hackel. Evan is the creator of the concept of engaging leadership and author of Engaging Leadership. Evan started more than 10 companies. During his tenure at CCA Global Partners, he ran a $5 billion division. One of his signature achievements was turning around a bankrupt business in 4 years, more than doubling system-wide sales to exceed $2 billion. As CEO of Tortle Training, a Charlotte, North Carolina-based firm that specializes in developing and implementing interactive training solutions for companies in all sectors, Evan is a leader in the training field. He's also founder and principal of Engage Consulting, a consulting firm headquartered in Woburn, Massachusetts. Evan is recognized as a thought leader, speaker, and author on leadership. Evan, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Terrific to be on. I'm very much looking forward to the conversation.
So I often describe the kind of plateau that we deal with on this show as, you know, if you look at somebody who's a leader, particularly somebody who's an experienced leader, if you look ahead at what you dream to achieve before your story ends and you see where you are now, there's a gap between the two. And if the gap is either not getting smaller fast enough, or perhaps more likely, the gap is getting bigger. And the media in our world, and social media in particular, make it look like everybody else around us is achieving breakthroughs left, right, and center. It can be not just cause for concern, but it can be a producer of great anxiety. And it's like, you know, I've been at this for a while, and the tools and the tricks that I've used to overcome roadblocks in the past just don't seem to be working this time. What do I do? What do I do differently? What do I do? So that's the scenario I like to describe, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about, you know, people that you've worked with who experience that kind of dilemma. You yourself have started and run lots of companies. I'm sure you've faced similar kinds of dilemmas. What's your thought about all this?
Well, first off, I really love that analogy of the gap getting bigger or not getting smaller, and everyone else you look around, this person is successful, that person is successful. First off, of course, we have no idea if people are really successful or not successful. And, you know, we all make these assumptions. And I find when you learn about somebody, the story is generally very different. But this is what I would say, and I think it's really important, is you have to define what is success and what is happiness. I was watching a TV show with my mother the other day, and there was a female 26-year-old woman who made the following statement: I just know once I get married and have a child, then I will be happy. And I know that's a personal reference, but if you think about it in business, I just know if I can just achieve this volume, or if I can just open up one more location, or if I can just go online and get I will then be happy. I will then be successful. And this is what I would say to people: if you're not enjoying the journey, there is something wrong. Because once you get to whatever destination you're going to get to, you should have a new destination. In fact, that's probably one of the biggest things that causes plateaus, is you finally get to that destination and you haven't been inspired, you haven't dreamed big enough. And from my point of view, you never want to catch up with your goals. You always want to be thinking further and stretching yourself, because that is, to me, one of the most important things. I have a keynote speech I give, Seeking Excellence, the Never-Ending Journey. And what I talk about that is that the world keeps changing around us. If we're not constantly getting better, we're falling back. And that you always have to look at innovating your business. So I think having that mindset of celebrating where you are, celebrating small victories, always looking at those things as accomplishments and appreciating what you've done really plays a large part. And I've got a couple, because you've given me time, and if it's okay with you, I'd like to just share some real life stories and examples of plateaus and what was done to overcome them. Would that make sense?
Yeah, please. I mean, that's what this show is all about. And by the way, Evan, I couldn't agree with you more that if goals are something that are concrete and attainable, I don't think they're actually good goals. And I also, like you, I don't believe that success is an absolute. I think it's a journey. It's a scale. You can increase your rate of success. You could decrease your rate of success. Yes, it's very much about the journey. And if the journey is over, then it raises all kinds of questions about your life.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, one of the key attributes of success to me is a positive attitude. It's infectious. People around you feel it. You want people, you know, you want to be a magnet as a leader where people want to be around. People don't like to be around negative people, for sure. So I'm going to start off and I'm going to give an example of plateau at a very small size and then plateau at a very big size. So I joined my family business back in like 1983, 84, maybe 82. It's a long time ago. And I sat down with my father and we talked about the business, and the business had plateaued. It was about a $3 million business, which in today's terms is maybe a $10 or $12 million business, but it hadn't really grown in 5 or 6 years. And the business was doing okay. It was making money, wasn't hugely successful, but at the same token, it was comfortable. And I think for my father, to some degree, you know, he didn't want to risk good for great. And he, you know, he liked the fact that it, you know, he was doing what he was doing. And I think sometimes that's why companies plateau. But I was just fresh back with my MBA. And I said to my father, you know, we need to build a business plan. And he says, that sounds like a good idea. I've never had one. And so I had, and I'm not really sure why, but this idea of engagement, and I spell engagement with an I for involvement. So my book is engagement with, so it's spelled I-N, not E-N. And that I stands for involvement. So what we did, the company had 5 different divisions, is we hosted a dinner for each different division, and we had white, you know, flip charts. And we asked everyone in the company, what do we got to do to grow the company? What do we got to do to grow the company? And we had open discussion, and everyone in the company, it didn't matter, janitor, it didn't matter what you did, everyone was invited. And at the time, I think we had 60 employees, maybe less. Anyhow, it doesn't matter. We invited everyone, and we put together a plan, and we literally shared the plan with everyone. So everyone was involved in the plan, and everyone was part of it, and everyone could see the plan, shared the financial details of the plan, and then proceeded to execute. And the plan was to grow from 3 million to 10 million in 5 years. And we ended up growing from 3 million to 5 million to 10 million to 25 million. So our growth—
In 5 years?
No, we did it in 4.
Wow.
Our growth rate was incredible. And when I sit back and I reflect on the experience, it was incredible because the people that were executing had bought into the plan. So there are a lot of times companies build plans. I've been involved in the meetings. You know, you bring in a strategic consultant, the senior team and the board members, or just the senior team or just the board members. They build a plan and they go to everyone, here's the plan, here's the plan. But that's not nearly as effective when people feel like they're authors. And that's why engagement with an eye for involvement really makes a huge difference, because these people were the authors. And I got to tell you something, there were a lot of ideas that came out of those meetings that neither my father or I would have thought of. So that is a good example of a small business catching on fire. And if I wanted to take this and make this now practical for all of you listening, this is what I would say to you to do, is develop a business plan. It doesn't need to be, you know, 100 pages long with, you know, long paragraphs. You know, PowerPoint, bullet points are fine, but don't create it yourself. Talk to all of your employees. And, you know, these brainstorming sessions, very simple. We had dinner, we had flip charts. What can we do to improve our business? People shared ideas. We took and picked a few of the bigger and better ones. We talked more about them. Talk to your customers. Ask your customers. Ask your suppliers. Your suppliers are in other people, other people's businesses, sometimes your competitors, they know what's going on. And then build a plan and share it with everyone. And believe me, if you do that and you get the buy-in and support of your team, then you're going to grow. Your business is going to absolutely pick up. And I know it sounds simple. I mean, certainly a fair amount of work, but it isn't complicated. And once you have that plan and you share that plan, you've got to keep going back and revisiting the plan and giving people updates and letting them know how you're doing on the plan. And you never want that plan to sit for more than 2 or 3 years before you redo the plan. So I always like to refer to it as a five-year vision, but the vision would never be older than 3 years. And that's because too much is happening in the world. So whether it's 2 years or 3 years probably has to do with how fast-paced your industry is changing. Okay, that's it on the small side. On the big side, I'll share this story because it was in the intro. There was a franchise organization called Flooring America, great organization, great franchisees. The company went bankrupt, and the company had 400 company-owned stores, they all shut. The franchisees, there were 202 franchisees doing about $700 million in business. The franchisees were very distraught, very upset, and we all came together, and we all built a plan. I'm sure that surprises everyone here. We built a plan. We went, in this case, city to city, and we did, I think, 10 different town hall meetings where all the franchisees came in and we asked them things and got their opinion, and so we could build a plan. And our business went crazy, went from $700 million to $2 billion in 2 years. Yes, we added locations. Yes, we added new members to the organization. But at the same token, same store sales skyrocketed in that period of time. So the company I worked for also had another division called Carpet One. And Carpet One, very, very successful, bigger, $3.5 billion business, very, very successful. But they had, at that time, plateaued. And they had plateaued. And so you're sitting here thinking, okay, it's a bigger organization. We've got more tools, more resources at our hands. Would it be harder or easier to get that business to succeed than Flooring America? And the answer was much harder, because one of the reasons why the company had plateaued is that the members of Carpet One, all of these store owners, they were happy. Their business had been good. They were profitable. They were successful. They were growing at the rate of the industry, but they weren't growing faster than the rate of the industry. So when you have people that are gone through a bankruptcy, there is a camaraderie that's built and a desire by everybody to move forward. So sometimes the biggest difficulty is getting and creating that mindset of the importance of the need to change and the importance of being successful. This happens to virtually everyone in your business, because you get to a place where you're really comfortable, you're making money, you've grown, and the next step is pushing and risking good to get to great. And if you're risking good to get to great, you know, what did it mean in the floor covering business? It might mean that you're going to go and open up a commercial floor covering department or builder department or open up a new branch. You know, these all are things that take capital, take risk. So the important thing, and what enabled us to jumpstart our business and have our business start to grow at twice or three times the industry rate, was, again, talking to people about what they were passionate about, the things that could make their businesses more successful. We really focused on the customer experience and taking it to a new level. So rather than rush out and say to everyone, okay, go ahead and spend a lot of money, open up another branch or go into these other businesses, we said, okay, we bet we can take the current retail business and make it better, that we could raise margins, that we can improve closing rates, include average tickets. We invested a tremendous amount in training. We brought out proprietary products that were unique, that had unique tools to them. And what this did was enable all of the stores to increase business because they were closing more of the customers coming in, increase profits because they increased margins. We actually, on average, increased margins by 8% through the use of technology and knowledge and information. And we spent a tremendous amount of time in execution. And we actually formed regional groups of the owners of the stores so they could all talk and help each other out and mentor each other, so that if one of them was successful and the other was stalled, they could help each other become successful. So the point that I'm trying to get at here is, in a bigger organization, particularly in a case where you're talking about Carpet One, where you have all these different owners, because it's not one corporation. They're technically, it's a co-op that has the store owners or the owners of the corporate organization. So these people all have their own needs and points of view. So from a management perspective, the clear goal was always to create consensus and teamwork so everyone worked together. We found the areas in which we could excel at dealing with the parameters that we dealt with, where people didn't want to go risk lots of capital and wanted to improve business, but through ways that didn't take that kind of risk. So that's a small example and a big example, and I'm sure you could add to the conversation or ask more questions, whatever works for you.
So it sounds to me like through both these examples, what you're talking about is creating a culture of engagement with an I, right? By involving people in all aspects of the business, both internally and externally. And I'm wondering if there is a way to identify perhaps some either top actionable steps that someone who's at a plateau can think about taking that will move the bar forward in creating an engaged culture, or maybe some like top questions to ask oneself. Sure. Or ask the people who are the stakeholders.
Okay, so the first question you have to ask yourself is, why are you at a plateau? What is the reason it's causing the plateau? Is the reason that's causing the plateau because you haven't been innovative? Is the reason it's caused the plateau because you've become comfortable? Is it because you don't have the right people on the bus in the business? Because change is hard? Because competitors have come into the marketplace? I mean, there are some people that are on not a plateau, they're on a slide, and which is not a good thing. So I think you really need to understand what those things are. And then you need to find what would then motivate your business to be more successful. And what is that goal that excites people? And every person, that goal is different. But I think before you start the process of building your plan, you have to, as the leader, really understand what your goals are. And, you know, there are different kinds of leaders. There are leaders that own the company. And, you know, obviously they have a lot of say in the direction. And then there are leaders that don't own the company, which then it's really a conversation with the board. Understand what the corporate goals are, what the tolerance for risk is, what the objectives of the company are. Once you kind of figured those things out, though, you really need to bring people in and into the vision. And I described this before, but I think it's so true, is that when you bring people in, you just get better ideas. You get a sense of camaraderie and teamwork where people are vested because they feel ownership in the ideas. They feel ownership in the passion. So you're building a better plan. You're creating this culture where everybody wants to work together and everyone wants to succeed. And, you know, if I can just take a second here and brag just a little bit, which probably don't like doing, but when I went to work for CCA Global Partners, I was the fifth employee, and there was a great group of people and two co-CEOs, Alan Greenberg, Howard Brodsky, terrific mentors and people. We grew at an average growth rate of 29% for 20 years, and we never hit a plateau. And the company didn't really hit a plateau until the recession of 2008. And the reason the company never hit a plateau is that we always had these big visions and big plans, and mediocrity was never accepted part of the culture. So I think as a leader, if you're at a plateau, you have to challenge yourself to reach higher and to really push the organization. Because the reality is that a plateau unchecked leads to a slide, and a slide leads to being out of business. We don't have the luxury of saying, wow, that was a really great year, I just like to keep repeating it. Because the reality is our competitors are getting better, the world's getting better, customers are getting sharper, smarter. And if you aren't constantly getting better, if you're not seeking excellence, you're going to falter, you're going to fail. Some industries faster than others. Does that all make sense?
Yeah. So Evan, this leads me to a question, which is, if creating this culture of engagement has such dramatically successful results, why doesn't everybody do it? Why is there resistance?
That's an excellent question. And I'm going to tell you right now, the number one reason why people don't do it is fear. They're afraid of sharing. They're afraid of being vulnerable. I actually talked to a very high level leader of a very large, you know, multi-billion dollar business once. And we were discussing management styles, and I was talking about my concept. And he says, I have a totally different concept. I believe that people want leaders that know the answers, and that people are looking up to me to have the answer. And then if I go to them and say, I'd like help coming up with the answers, I'm showing weakness, and then they become fearful. And there are certainly people that believe that. I would argue that there are times when a more authoritarian form of management makes sense. You know, if a business is in crisis, near bankruptcy, and sharp and immediate changes need to take place, and there's not time, excellent example of it. But I think so you've got an issue of where some people culturally just don't like it. I think you had an issue, and I think this is the prime one, that people are afraid to be vulnerable and that they're concerned what people will think. I would add that it takes more time to do it that way. And, you know, being open and transparent, and just to give you an idea, at my current company, and I manage and operate a consulting firm, I manage and operate a training company, and we have a fair number of employees, and every quarter I share our financial statements with the entire company, and I review them and I go over them. And, you know, you could say, well, that's easy to do. If you're doing okay, you know, then, you know, no embarrassment there. But when I took over the training company and I bought the training company was in trouble. It wasn't successful. It wasn't making money. And it took us a good 2 years to turn that situation around. So for 2 years, I was showing people a financial statement that most people might say, wow, that would make everyone run for the doors, because we were making major investments in improving our technology, major investments improving our sales team, major investments improving our process, major investments in advertising, branding. So, you know, the first 2 years, if you looked at the company's financial statements, you go, oh my God, this is terrible. But it wasn't terrible in the context that you had an owner and a manager that went into the business. And by the way, commend my partner, Cordell Riley, too, because it's not just me, the two of us, really, that they could see that we had a vision, they could see we had a passion, they were all involved in building the plan, and we review the plan and where we're going with the team on a very regular basis, too. They knew the company was making investments, so they understood what was going on. Then you have people the other way that think that, oh my God, everyone's going to see how much money you're making. And they see how much money you're going to make, and they're going to all want more. Well, the fact is everyone wants more no matter what. And, you know, I think that people really appreciate the candor and the transparency tremendously. And it's, by the way, I don't just email people the financial statements. It's almost like a quarterly report that people do, you know, if it was a publicly held company. I present the information, I share with them what our key successes were, where we made it, where we failed in our plan. I go through the document, I explain different things in the document might be difficult to understand. I open up for questions. And I think this inspires things. And look, at my company, you know, is fairly small. We have 16 employees. In the last 4 years, we had one person leave for a startup, and he just decided to come back. So that's, to me, pretty good. And then I had a person right out of college who was with us for 6 months who departed. Other than that, I've had zero turnover. In fact, the other way, where employees come to me and say, I know someone would be perfect. We should bring them into the team. And that's part of the culture. And turnover kills company. So I've spent a lot here. I probably like to talk about how you treat people, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Okay. So,
because I think that's a big part of it.
It is a big part of it. I don't care what statistic it is you want to improve. The first way to improve it is to be a really good employer, where people want to work, where you have good communication. You know, they talk about improving customer service. And, you know, it's interesting. I joke with people all the time. And you know, saying that we talk about customer service. I said, let me ask you a few questions about your employer, and then I'll tell you whether you have good customer service or not. So they go, okay, I'll give that a try. I said, does your employer ever ask you how the business could be better? Well, no, they never do. If you go and present an idea, do they listen to you? And they go, I don't even know how I would present it. Anyhow, I ask them all these kind of questions. And if the company is like, yeah, they listen, they're great, I go, I bet you guys have really good customer service. They go, you're right. And if they don't, I go, I bet you guys have bad customer service. Oh, my God, it's a major problem. And the point is that the employees are the people that make the difference. And you invest a lot in those employees and the skill sets and the knowledge of the business. And the drain on any time someone leaves is massive. And it's so important to treat them well. And treating them well is having good benefits. And, you know, I watch the news and I watch things about healthcare. And, you know, and I sit back and I say to myself, how can an employer afford not to offer people healthcare? Because if you don't offer people healthcare, which is one of the most essential needs of somebody, of an employee, as soon as they find a job that offers healthcare, they're going to leave you. So unless you're just willing to accept massively high turnover, you've got to have benefit plans that are good enough to compete with everybody else in the marketplace. You've got to pay people. Then you've got to, you know, so in my company, a big thing of what we do, we got rid of annual reviews. We build job descriptions that are not just about what you do, but how you do things, your attitudes, what we expect. We do, depending on the role, either a weekly, bi-weekly, or once a month touch base where the manager will sit down and it's more of a coaching conversation than it really is a review. But the one thing that we constantly ask people is to share their vision of the company in their own words. Every employee in the company needs to be able to state the vision of the company in their own words. Every person that I hire, I personally sit down with them and I review our mission, vision, our values, and our whole strategic plan. And I expect everybody in the company to know it. And so when you're coaching people and you're helping them, and the difference between once a week and once a month is really how senior are they, how well do they know the job, is when they see that everyone's there to help them, everyone's there to support them, everyone's there to help them make their job better, it makes a difference. I'm going to share one last thing we do, because this to me is huge. I just started doing it 4 years ago. I wish I'd done it earlier in my career. We give every employee a $2,000 budget for personal improvement or training that they can spend any which way they want. So if I have an employee that wants to go to some kind of conference and it costs $2,000 and less, they can go without asking. They can just go. If it's more, they've got to ask for the difference. If they want to go and they want to take a course, they want to whatever they want to do with their $2,000, they can spend that $2,000 any way they want to make them better at what they do. And every person, I believe, needs to have a personal development plan. Okay, where do you want to go? How do you get there? But this idea of allowing people to know the company is going to invest in them and they can choose what they want to do to make themselves better, I got to tell you something, transformative. People use it, which I love. And, you know, people talk about it. So I really think that, you know, when you look at a business, you know, a foundation is your number one most important asset, which is your people. And the business plan is how you build this massively successful business on top of that foundation.
Yeah, thank you. Sense? Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. I think this is a tip that everybody can learn from. And I can understand why you wish you had done it sooner. Evan, whom do you know personally who's done a really remarkable job at smashing the plateau?
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Bill Bozeman of PSA Security. And Bill runs a cooperative of a little over 200 different security firms, and it would be very easy for him to just sit back and let that business coast. But he is constantly challenging the people that work in that company how they can step it up a notch, provide more services to their members, do better job at buying to their members. And he has grown that business 3 or 4 times the industry growth rate, really done a much amazing job helping all of his member stores be more profitable. And I just enjoy watching him constantly pushing the envelope of what more can we do? What more can we do? What more can we do? And he involves his staff. He involves his employees. He's done town hall meetings with his members. And, you know, he runs amazingly successful businesses. It's just an absolute pleasure to watch.
Wow. Great example. And what's coming up in the near future for you?
Well, the thing I'm probably most excited about is I am working on a new book, my second book, which is Engaging Leadership for Millennials. And it's how to manage millennials and how for millennials to be good managers. And we're doing a lot of research. In fact, we're working on the research project now. And what I have found, and this is anecdotally and I want to prove, that there's a huge gap on what people think of millennial employees and what they really are. So most people in senior management that I know talk in great disdain about millennial employees, that they're entitled, they turn over faster, they're lousy employees. And to me, I love millennial employees. I think it's the greatest work generation we have ever had because they come to work with more ideas, more suggestions. And the key is to tap that resource. And that if you do what they want, and by the way, the number one most important single thing to a millennial is training and development, personal development. They want to be in a job where they feel they're growing and they're learning. And the next, I think, is that they need, you know, like money to eat. Very closely after that, they want to work in a company that has a vision that they believe in. And I can tell you, if you're not sharing a vision, it's hard for someone to believe in it if they don't know what it is. So if you align with the millennials and run a business that they like and they believe in, if you help them grow as people, if you allow them to innovate and share ideas, you've just got people that are going to work like crazy, work well, work smart. And so this book is, to me, a great passion. My company is, my training company last year grew 37%. This year we're slated to grow 40%. So just keeping up with bringing in the right people, improving the systems. We have a great plan, lots of innovation in our future. So that's really exciting for me. I love my consulting and private and public speaking. Probably wish I did more public speaking. So that's something I got to work on. So those are kind of the big things for me.
That's great. And Evan, how can listeners learn more about you and follow you?
I have a website, engage.net. It's INGAGE.net. And if you go, there's a place to click on for my book, and there's also a place to click for my speaking services. If you go to my book section, by the way, I have a free offer. There is actually a little workbook to help you do planning with your team. So it's 5 exercises that help you engage your team around the plan. So you don't even have to buy my book. You can just download that workbook, although I recommend the book. I'm also on Twitter at ehackle, and I'm on LinkedIn as Evan Hackle, and I would be delighted to link with you, delighted to follow you on Twitter. I do post a tremendous amount of information. I write a lot of articles. My goal in life is to be a real advocate for engagement and a real advocate for training. And to me, these are two of the most important things for successful businesses. So if you like those topics and you like to learn more, really encourage you to follow me on both LinkedIn and on Twitter. I would be delighted to follow you too if you feel you have things that I would be interested in following.
And I want to add to that I've read your book, and it's a really great book. So I do encourage listeners to actually pick up a copy. Investment in a book is a relatively small monetary investment, and the rewards can be huge.
The book is, by the way, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any online bookstore, and it's Engaging Leadership with an Eye, 21 Ideas to Elevate Your Business. So I would certainly like that. It's also audio and Kindle.
So easy to consume. Evan, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a great conversation about success and happiness. My guest today has been Evan Hackle, CEO of Engage Consulting. Thank you again, Evan, for joining us.
Thank you for having me, and thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.